On today's Garnet Community Podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by Ria Antonio Curignotti, who works at the John Innes Centre. And we're talking about a paper just published in Genes and Development, the title of which is Non-Coding SNPs Influence a Distinct Phase of Polycomb Silencing to Destabilise Long-Term Epigenetic Memory at Arabidopsis FLC. So it's FLC, so it's a collaboration between Caroline Dean and Martin Howard. And this is the latest episode in the long story of the complex regulation of FLC. So, Ria, thanks very much for joining us, and it'd be cool if you could give us an explanation of what you did in this particular paper.
Hello, thank you. So I work on the gene FLC, which controls flowering time, and it's itself controlled by cold temperatures. So there's a process called vernalization, which basically means if the plant experiences a long period of cold, it will be able to flower afterwards. Mm-hmm. And in this particular paper, we started off interested in the natural variation of FLC. So it's been shown previously that a lot of the different behaviors that are seen in the field in terms of the vernalization really depends on the FLC sequence itself. And this is SNPs in a non-coding region. So it's the regulation of FLC that is controlled by its own sequence, effectively. And we looked at one particular accession that has also been looked at previously, where four single nucleotide polymorphisms had been identified to be very, very important. And LAV1 is the name of this accession, and that comes from the north of Sweden. And it has this striking behavior that it reactivates its FLC, so it doesn't silence stably if it doesn't experience a long enough cold. So we wanted to understand the mechanism of how this happens. So we actually found that the actual silencing procedure seems to be exactly the same in this LAV1 accession compared to our LAV genotype, which is called FRIES, which is a Columbia with a FRI introgressed into it to have a need for vernalization. So, and COLFRI is a fast vernalizer. So the actual rate of shutdown in both of these is the same. So they behave the same during the cold, but then when LAV1 comes out of the cold, it actually shows a reactivation, whereas COLFRI is stably silenced.
And that response kind of mimics what this, these Swedish accessions would see in nature, essentially.
So in nature, what you would actually see is you would, once you get to winter, you would always see a long period of cold. And so you would have no need, you would not reactivate, or you would deactivate very little at the end of the full winter. It's only if there's a period of cold in the autumn that starts the vernalization, and then there's a warm period following that, and that's when you want to definitely not flower if you're in Sweden, because if you start flowering there and winter comes, you're dead. So it's that is what the plants want to avoid in that case. So that if you have a short period of cold, your FLC starts to come down, but then as soon as you have warm, it will go right back up, and so that will stop flowering in natural conditions. So that's the key adaptive trait for a LAV1, we think.
Cool. So could you give a bit of an overview about how the silencing process works in the Columbia and in the LAV1?
So we have two processes that happen for silencing. So we have a nucleation process, which is the silencing marks in a particular region of FLC that happen in the cold. And then after the cold, what happens in the normal genotypes that we look at is these silencing marks spread all over the FLC locus. So this is the histone 3K27, lysine 27 trimethylation mark. And so we actually see the same exactly in LAV1. And it's only after 20 days that we observe a decrease in these marks. So it fully silences and spreads, and then after that it loses the mark. So it's not a difference in the silencing process per se, but in the stability of the silencing afterwards. So we have this delay in the reactivation, and then of course the other process is that the other feature of the silencing is that if you have a long cold, you're not going to lose your marks, or your reactivation is much, much slower. So we wanted to understand these things. And so we've made a mathematical model that told us that if we have a multi-step process of this reactivation, then that can explain this delay. And so we looked carefully at the silencing marks, what happens between at the different time points, and actually found that we see a change between 10 and 30 days where the silencing marks do actually come down in nucleation regions. So that kind of suggests that the nucleation process itself is lost from from the epigenetic state, okay. And we only have the K27 feedbacks that are in the spread state, sort of holding the whole locus together. So this is a new chromatin state that we call the perpetuated state, mm-hmm. which has the, let's say, the usual chromatin silencing feedbacks of the polycomb that are keeping the locus silent.
So what nucleotide changes are you interested in between the COL0 accession and the LUV1 accession?
Well, I'm particularly interested in the four SNPs that are shown to be key for the difference between COL3 and LUV1. And so those SNPs allow these feedbacks to be very strong and keep the locus silent. Mm-hmm. Whereas in LUV1, what happens is your sequence doesn't, well, so what we think might be happening is that the sequence doesn't bind the polycomb proteins as strongly, but that we don't really know exactly what it is. But for some reason, that sequence is not allowing these feedbacks to be as strong. And so once you lose your nucleation, you start to lose your all your silencing. So this perpetuated state is where these SNPs are important, because with one set of SNPs it's a stable state, and with another it's not a stable state.
Okay, so let me come in on that. So as you described, so you have nucleation, spread, and then you have this kind of reactivation where you essentially lose the H3K27 methylation over time. And all this is due to these four SNPs. It's pretty incredible, really, that such yeah. complex thing. So there's quite a lot of understanding of the molecular players that are involved in nucleation and spread. So do you have any clue at the moment, or any idea what sort of molecular players might be involved in this reactivation or maintenance of this perpetual state?
So at the moment, no. So because the problem is, to do this kind of experiments, we need to have the LUV1 sequence in combination with a protein that we can actually monitor. So we would have to do chip, mm-hmm. Protein chip on let's say the polycomb proteins, for example, but with a LUV-FLC.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
First of all, that means that to get this plant, we would have to have longer cycles, longer generations, because it needs such a long vinylization treatment to be stably silent so we could get these players. So it takes a very long time to generate these lines. So we are actually trying to generate these lines, but we didn't have time to do that within this work. But that is what we would like to look at. So is the binding affected of the polycomb proteins, or is it the binding of demethylases affected? For example, ELF6 is known to take away the K27 mark. So could it be that it's binding more strongly, and so the balance of the methylation and demethylation is broken, for example? Mm-hmm. So that is a possibility.
Okay, that's great. So let's go back to the model briefly. So you talk about this perpetual state, this perpetuated state that the chromatin exists in. And through the work of the model, you discovered something else which is involved with maintaining that perpetual state. So can you talk about that a little, please?
So the other process that is interesting about this epigenetic mechanism is that if you give a longer period of call to the plants, it will not reactivate. And of course, that's very important, because LUV1 does also want to flower when it's had a proper winter in Sweden, right? Mm-hmm. So what we think is happening there is this perpetuated state that I described is actually unstable still in after a longer cold. But after a longer cold, the FLC has come down even further. And so flowering starts earlier. Mm-hmm. And so flowering itself, we think, could be the reason that's stopping the reactivation. So first we thought maybe FT is involved, but actually it doesn't look like FT is necessary for mm-hmm. this. But rather, the flowering itself changes the replication, the DNA replication from the rosette to the stem. So the rosette stops replicating. Mm-hmm. And so every time you replicate, of course, that's a challenge to keep your memory. But if you're a group genetic memory, but if you're not replicating, then your marks can just stay on the chromatin.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So they don't have something to fight against, essentially. Mm-hmm. So when you have had a longer cold, you flower faster, so you stop replicating faster, and so there's less challenge to your perpetuated state, and so that allows it to be to just stay silent.
I see. Yeah, it's an interesting situation wherein FLC is essentially fighting against itself. Though it's trying to silence, but then suddenly the flowering, which is what it's all about, is stopping it from being reactive. Yeah, so it's kind of a complicated situation.
Yeah, so it's kind of feeding back somehow through flowering.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. So just a final question for you. So, you know, the 1001 Genome Project, you know, there's accessions from all over the world, but there's a lot of accessions found in kind of northern latitudes and a lot of Swedish accessions. So is this a shared aspect of all those Swedish accessions? Are we able to say that, or is Love One got a unique mechanism and maybe some other Swedish accessions would have a different mechanism? Do we know much about that at the moment?
So we know at least one of them has different mechanism, but we haven't investigated the others to this extent. And this is something that we're looking at to do next. So we don't know exactly what the mechanism is in each of the different cases. So we know that they are also slow vernalizers in Sweden, but whether the same process involved, actually, we don't know yet. Okay. And that's something that I'm interested to look at.
Okay, so there we go. So thanks very much, Ria, for joining us today. There's always going to be more FLC work coming out of the lab there in the Joint Centre, and we look forward to hearing the next steps over the coming years. So thank you very much.
Thank you.